Okay, we're going to start here on the top of Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. Just to review what we finished up with yesterday, we saw a machloket in our Mishnah as to whether a Kohen can have the Eruv placed inside of a kever, inside of Beit HaKvarot. And the Gemara suggested that the machloket revolved around the ability of the Kohen to access the Eruv within the Beit HaKvarot. And that is that he could go through with a Shida, Teva, or Migdal. And the machloket is whether such a mechanism, which is called an ohel zarup, is considered to be an ohel. Does that work to stop the tumah from reaching him? And therefore he could access his eruv inside of the Beit HaKvarot? Or do we say that no, that such an ohel is not really an ohel, does not protect him, and therefore he couldn't access his eruv that is inside of the Beit HaKvarot. So that was the way that we ended yesterday. And then we have on the last line on Lamed Amevet, Va Detanyo, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Here it says, Ma'arvim the Kohen Tahor, Bitruma Tehora Bekever. So we saw Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah who says that the Kohen can have a eruv placed inside of the Beit HaKvarot. Now we have Rabbi Yehuda saying that you can make an eruv for a Kohen Tahor with Truma Tehora inside of the kever. Now, kosh came b'chulin. Of course, you could use chulin, and that's, in the Mishnah, he's likely speaking about chulin, and that's much easier to understand, because even if the chulin becomes tamei, the Kohen could still eat that chulin. The problem with truma is, if truma becomes tamei'ah, then it's not allowed to be eaten, even by a Kohen. So now, what the Braita suggests in the name of Rav Yehuda is, that if you have a Kohen who is tahor, who is permitted to eat truma, and you have Trumat Tahora that was placed inside the kever, inside the cemetery, then that's fine. That would work as an Eruv. So, Hechiozil. So, first of all, how does he get there? That's the same suggestion that we had before, which is Shida, Teva, Umigdal. Go in some sort of enclosure that will take him in there. Veha, Kevin, Da'achto, Itzmayela. This is your question. Wait a minute. The Truma. Forget about it. The Kohen. The Truma that's sitting inside of the Beit HaKvarot. As soon as you place it down in the Beit HaKvarot, the Truma becomes Truma Tmeiyah. So then, how does that help you that he can get, or that the Kohen can get there and access the Beit HaKvarot? The Truma itself is going to become Tmeiyah, and then you have a problem. So Gemara gives two answers. One is either below Hukshira, by food items. In order for food to be Mekabel Tuma, it has to first be Hukshar Mekabel Tuma. Prepared to be Mekabel Tuma, that means that one of the seven liquids has to have passed over that item, washed that item in order for it to be mekabel tuma. So this is an item that has yet to be hukshar mekabel tuma. If that's the case, it won't be mekabel tuma, even if it's placed inside of the Beit HaKvarot. The other answer is, oh, shnilo sham me perot, that it was kneaded with fruit juices. Instead of being made together with water, which they would have made a hukshar mekabel tuma and would have made it into a bread substance here by using mei peirot to make it, using fruit juices to make it, you don't have a liquid that's passed over it to make it hukshar. Plus, you are making it into bread that is made with mei peirot that would not be a kabel tuma. So essentially the same answer. In one case, you're talking about a food item that hasn't been mukshar. Over here, you're talking about even through the preparation process, it was prepared. They made bread. But they made bread in such a way that it was not mukshar the kabel tuma. Okay, now we got through the second part of the problem. First problem was, how does he get there? Second problem was, how is the Truma Tahora there? So he got there through a Shida Teva Migdal. Truma is there and not Tmeah because it wasn't Mukshar. Now the last part of the problem is, Behechi Maitila. How does he get it? So he's in there inside of his enclosure. The Truma is sitting inside the Beit HaKvarot. How does he access the Truma without becoming Tameh? Without coming into contact with the Beit HaKvarot. So it says, "Bepshute kliyetz delo mekabel tuma." That he uses a pshute kliyetz, a flat piece of wood that is not mekabel tuma. In general, in order for an item or material to be mekabel tuma, it has to be what we call dumel sak. It has to be similar to a sack, which means that it has a toch, that it has an inside to it, and it has utility through it having a toch. So eitz or wood is one of those items that requires a toch in order to be mekabel tuma, and therefore pshute kliyetz, flat pieces of wood, are not mekabel tuma. Oh, so very good. So Tosafot talks about exactly what you're describing. That's what it says here, more extensively in the Gemara Menachot. He speaks about it, much as a large Toshvot here. There's a massive Toshvot in the Gemara Menachot about this, that you can't just say Pshute Kliyets are not Mekabel Tuma. It's just not true. The Gemara in other places says that a Shulchan, a wood table that is a flat surface, is Mekabel Tuma. There are instances, like you're speaking about, in terms of like bakeries, where the flat shovels that they use to take stuff out of the ovens are Mekabel Tuma. How could it be that the Gemara just says Pshute Kliyets are not Mekabel Tuma? So Tosfot here does it a little bit in Menachot more extensively. He categorizes the Pshute Kliyets. And he says there's some Pshute Kliyets, flat pieces of wood, that are even Mekabel Tuma min HaTorah. And those are either very large, flat pieces of wood, or items that are there to service man, that have a very particular use, that Shimush Adam. There's another category of Pshute Kliyets that are Tamei Midrabanan. And there's a third category of Pshute Kliyets that are Tahor the Gamre. And those are smaller pieces of flat wood that don't really have purpose, are not designed to be a kli, or not designed to use in a large setting. So Tosva does speak about exactly what you're asking and divides it up. So obviously here we're talking about a smaller piece of flat wood that is a pshute kliyets that is not mekabel tuma. So then the Gemara says, v'haka ma'ahil. So isn't he being ma'ahil? This goes back, a long way back, to the first perek in the Gemara in Shabbat. One of the gzeirot in the first perek in the Gemara in Shabbat was that if you have something that is behekifot tevach, a darban, or anything that is more than a behekifot tevach, and it's ma'ahil, then we say that it's mevi tuma. It's mevi tuma, even though technically it's not an ohel, it's a din de rabbanan, because we're worried about certain instances. That's true, whether it's a tevach wide or behekifot tevach. So yesh bekli poteach tevach or hekifot tevach gazru al adam an oso ba'ovei amardeya b'yitziyat ha-shabbat. Someone's carrying it, then we are gozer tuma on this individual because we're afraid that it's mahiyo and brings the tuma to that person even though nothing happened. If it is a tefach wide, then it would be an ohel mina Torah, and it would be mevi tuma mina Torah. If it's a tefach in circumference, that is subject to the gzeirah in the Gemara in the first parak in Shabbat. And over there, the Gemara says that we are gozer when it has a circumference of a tefach, up to a case where it has a tefach. So if this item that he's picking up the truma with is either a tefach wide or has a tefach in circumference, then that would be meviyat to tuma. It would either be an ol d'oraita or an ol d'rabanan and cause him to become tamei because of his reaching across the kever with this tool. And of course, as we said before, if the tool is not a pshute kliyets and you're using something that is mekabel tuma, then the item would be mekabel tuma, and that would make him tamei. So we said we're using pshute kliyets, but even within pshute kliyets, if it's too wide, it won't work. It won't help you in this circumstance. If he's using a pshute kliyets that's a tefach wide, then he runs into a tuma problem again. So the Gemara answers that he does it demaiti la achurei. He turns whatever item it is around and uses the back side of it where it's not a tefach wide. So if you're talking about an item that has a long stick or a handle to it on the other end where it's a pshute kliyets, that the side that's not wide a tefach, that's the side that he uses to get or access. He can use something like a lance to lance the food that's less than a tefach wide so that he doesn't run into this problem of bringing the tumah because of that gzeirah in the first perek of Shabbat. The Gemara says, you came up with such a great solution, Ihochi, my time at the Rabbanon. Why don't the Rabbanon agree with Rabbi Yehuda? We know that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees in the Mishnah. So you came up with a great solution for all the problems of tumah. We came up one by one. We knocked off the problems, the access of the Kohen, Shei the Teva Migdal. The truma itself is not Hukshar. He uses Pshute Kliyets. He uses the back of the Pshute Kliyets, so it's not a Tefach wide or Bekifot Tefach. All of a sudden, you know, we have a great story to tell. Why don't the Rabbanon agree with that? The Gemara says, my time with the Rabbanon, Kasavre also liknot bayit v'isurei hana'a. Person may not gain access or create an Eruv Tchumin in an instance or a case where there is Isurei hana'a. One is, if we're talking about a Beitak Varot, then there's no question over here that the Rabbanan could disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, because we already saw that before. They could argue about the problem of access through the Shida, Teva, and Migdal, which is, does that work or does that not work? Is that an ohel to protect the Kohen, or is that not an ohel to protect the Kohen? So in a case of a Beit HaKvarot, in a full cemetery, we don't have any questions that the Rabbanan would disagree with Rabbi Yehuda and why they would disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. Our question is by Kever Yechidi. If you have a single kever that's out there, a single grave that's out there, Rabbi Yehuda would still say that you could gain access to the Truma there. You could put your Erev Tchum in there and it wouldn't be a problem. The Gemara's question is, in that instance, why did the Chachamim disagree? Over there, he doesn't need the Sheda Teva Migdal. All he needs to do is access the Truma without becoming Tmei Ah. And he could do that by just reaching over with this item, or this Pshutei Kliyetz, and gain access to his Erev Tchumin. So the Gemara answers that that's because you're not allowed to create an Erev Tchumin in a place where it's Isurei Hana'ah. And here, Rashi explains to us, because he is using this Tchum, or Erev Tchumin, to gain extra space on Shabbat, or extra length, distance on Shabbat that he's allowed to walk. So he's getting Hana'ah. And over here, it's a, what we call Tashmishi Amet. It's in an area that belongs to the mate. And so, that is, anything that belongs to the mate is considered to be Isurei Hana'ah. And so here, you have a Kever, which the mate is Kone that Makom, to be his. That's what we've spoken about in the past. That even by a mate mitzvah, it's kone mikomo, and he's kone the place where the person passes away. You can bury him there, even though it's not necessarily so convenient or the right place to have a cemetery, because he's kone the makom where he dies. And so to here, with a kever, the mate is kone that makom. If you utilize the space above it, then you are in the airspace, you're in the space of the mate. And leaving out all issues of tuma, there's a separate issue of not utilizing the kever for your personal benefit. And that's why the Chachamim do not want you to put your Erev Tchumin on top of the Kever. Michlau, well, you'd have to conclude from that, Rabbi Yehuda Savar Mutar, so that Rabbi Yehuda thinks that it's okay to use the Kever. Why is that the case? Nobody disagrees that the utilization of the Kever is wrong, so how can Rabbi Yehuda say that it's okay? Because, Savar, mitzvot lav lehenot nitnu. Because he believes that mitzvot are not given to lehenot, this is something that we discussed yesterday, that Erev Tchumin, what's the reason that you can put up an Erev Tchumin, is only because of a mitzvah or for a mitzvah. Well, if that's the case, then the only reason you're putting an Erev here is to accomplish some sort of mitzvah. Now, if mitzvah is a lav lehenot nitnu, then you aren't getting any benefit, quote-unquote, from putting your Erev on top of this kever. And by doing so, you haven't violated any restriction against gaining a benefit from the mate or the tashmisha mate. Correct. He doesn't have to eat it, but he still has to access it. The rule in Erev Tchumin is that you have to have access to it. You don't have to eat it. But the access to it grants you the ability to go further distance on Shabbat. And that is Hana. But if you're doing it for a mitzvah, then we say that mitzvot, even though technically you are getting Hana'ah because you're able to accomplish the mitzvah, that's not a real Hana'ah because that's not personal benefit. That's L'shem Shemayim. And L'shem Shemayim, we don't count that as being real Hana'ah. Now the Gemara says, Elaha Damarova. Mitzvot lav lehenot nitnu. If that's the case, now, we have a statement from Rava, statement in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, which we mentioned yesterday, that mitzvot are not given to get hana from them. It would turn out now, lema ketanai. Let us say that that is a machloket tanaim. Because, over here, the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing about whether you could put an eruv on top of a kever. Well, if we assume that the only reason you're putting an eruv down is for a mitzvah, that means that their argument revolves around this issue. Are mitzvot lehenot nitnu or lo lehenot nitnu? Rabbi Yehuda says, mitzvot lav lehenot nitnu, no problem putting it on top of the grave. Chachamim say that mitzvot are lehenot, and therefore you can't put it on top of the grave. Rava makes a statement, which seems to be, he's making a universal statement, yet the truth is, it turns out to be a machloket tanaim here. So, Lema ketanai amra lishmatei, that he says his statement within the context of a machloket tanaim. There are tanaim who argue about the principle that he's establishing. So amra lecha Rava, Rava says, isvi reluhud ein marvi melu dvar mitzvah. If you really believe that you can only make an eruv for a mitzvah, then everybody would say, dekuliyamo mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu. Everybody would agree with me. Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim would agree with me that if the only reason you can make an eruv was for a mitzvah, then mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu. So what are they arguing about? This is what they're arguing about. Rabbi Yehuda believes the only reason you can put out an Eruv is for a mitzvah. So that's why you can put it on top of the grave, because you'll never be in a position where you're getting benefit from the grave. You're always doing it for a mitzvah. And mitzvah, lav le'enot ninu. On the other hand, Chachamim believe marvin afidu ledvar rishut. Chachamim believe that you can make an Eruv both for a mitzvah and a non-mitzvah. That means you could really run into a problem. If you do it for a mitzvah, in Achanami, it would be fine, because mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu. But if you put out an Erev Tchumin for personal use, you want to go to a friend's house in the other city, you want to visit your parents in the other city, then you're doing it for personal benefit. You're doing it for personal benefit, then we have a problem, because then it is lehenot. And if you use the kever when it's lehenot, then you have a problem, because now you're benefiting from something that belongs to the mate. Well, that runs into another problem, which is a memra that's further on in the Masefta, which we mentioned yesterday, which is Elo Hadam Arv Yosef, Emar Vimel Dvar Mitzvah. Rav Yosef says you can only make an Eruv for a Bar Mitzvah. So now let us say now, Lema Ketanai Amra L'Shmatei. So the same way before we thought that Rav Yosef made a statement and everybody agrees with this statement, now all of a sudden we have Tanaim arguing about this point, whether you can put an Eruv down for a Mitzvah or you can put an Eruv down for a non-Mitzvah. So let us say that statement that Rav Yosef is going to make is actually a Machloket Tanaim. So I'm like, Rav Yosef, no, the Kuli Alma in Marvim Elo Dvar Mitzvah. Everybody agrees that you can only put an Eruv down for Dvar Mitzvah. Ooh, the Kuli Alma Mitzvot Lav Le'enot didn't know. And everybody agrees with Rava's statement that Mitzvot Lav Le'enot didn't know. So in this case, you have, number one, that everybody believes it's only for a Mitzvah, like Rav Yosef says. We also believe, like Rava, Mitzvot Lav Le'enot didn't know. Well then, what are they arguing about? Ubahaka Miflege. Marsava Kevan Dekanale Eruv. Lo nechale demintera. That once the Eruv does its purpose, it serves its purpose. What's the purpose of the Eruv? To allow him to walk an additional 2,000 amot on Shabbat from the Eruv. Not from his house, but from the Eruv itself. So it has a particular function here, which is that it allows him to walk where he wants on Shabbat. Then, once it's accomplished that, what do you want with this Eruv? What do you think about this Eruv? Truthfully, if it disappeared at that point in time, you'd be fine. Because the Eruv just has to be there at Benesh Mashot, Knisata Shabbat. After that, if it got eaten, it wouldn't even be a problem. If some animal came and walked away with it, you'd be totally fine. So our question is, what does the person who has this Eruv placed there think? So one of two options. Either, Kevan Dekanile Eruv, Lo Nechale Demintera. One possibility is that once the Eruv does its function, its purpose, the person is indifferent about what happens to the Eruv. The other possibility is, Mar Sabar, Nechalei Dimitra, Dietzrichachile. The other person said, wait, he happens to have it there. It would be nice. If it's still there when he gets there, he can eat it. So he'll benefit from it. That difference will result in a hana'ah that's independent of the mitzvah. For the mitzvah, it suffices that the Eruv was there at the time that you needed the Kinyan Eruv, Benesh Mashot, right as Knesset Shabbat. After that point in time, the mitzvah is done in terms of the Eruv accomplishing what you need for the mitzvah. Beyond that, the Eruv staying there is only for your own personal benefit. The question is, are you interested in that personal benefit? Rabbi Yehuda believes no. He says, once the Eruv does its job, you couldn't care less what happens to the Eruv, and therefore the fact that it stays there, it's not personal benefit to you, because you really don't care about it. On the other hand, the Chachamim believe that once the Eruv is placed down, and it accomplishes its mitzvah, you'd still prefer that it stays there, because then you could get the food, and can eat it, you can utilize it. And since you prefer that it stays there, you're actually getting benefit from the kever now independent of the mitzvah. Nothing to do with the mitzvah. It's just keeping your Eruv intact. Your Eruv is placed there. And that's what causes the hana'ah. And that'll be the machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda with regards to a single kever. So in the end, we have both Rava and Rav Yosef who made statements that are very important statements in Shas. We say both of them no, their statements are not governed by this machloket. They're not subject to this machloket Tanaim. And they're both able to explain the Machloket Tanaim without undermining their positions. Okay, now next Mishnah. This Mishnah, when we did this in the Gemara and Shabbat, maybe even the Gemara Brachot, I mentioned to you that these are items that the Gemara comes back to over and over again. We saw it once in Brachot, we saw it once in Shabbat, we're going to see it here, we're going to see it again in Pesachim, again in Beitzah, that the Mishnayot, when they want to speak about items that have subpar performance. You did something wrong with the item. We have a list, half of which of those items, even though you did a subpar performance, are okay. And another half of the list where if you did a subpar performance, the items are no good. And the Mishnayot always use the same examples to give you that list and to teach you that information. That is, me'arvin. One is allowed to use for an Eruv, demai. Demai is produce that belonged to an Am Haaretz, and we are uncertain as to whether Trumot and Masrot were taken off of that item. The general understanding or belief is, Rov Am Haaretz Masrin Hein. Majority of Am Haaretz do take off Maser. Despite the fact that Chachamim were Gozer, that with Demai, we ask you to take off Trumot and Masrot again, in such a manner that there's very little loss to you to do it, but we do it, Bemi Toch Safek. So here you have this demai, which is the produce from an amaretz, where we're uncertain as to whether they took off trumot or masrot. Uba maaser rishon shenitla trumato. Maaser rishon is the 10% that is taken off of the produce and given to the Levi. The Levi himself has to, from that maaser rishon, give trumat maaser, which is a tenth of a tenth, to be given to the Kohen. So over here we're talking about maaser rishon that had its trumat maaser taken off of it. Obviously, that's okay to use, because maaser rishon, after the trumat maaser is taken off, it is chulin. So the Gemara will explain to us what exactly went wrong here, why there was some sort of subpar performance. Maaser sheni, which is the second tenth that's taken off of the produce in the years 1, 2, and 4, 5 of the Shemitah cycle. Vehegdesh, anything that you makdish, that you redeem. Both of those are allowed to be redeemed. So again, why this is a subpar performance we'll deal with in the Gemara, but they were redeemed. After they're redeemed, they're fully chulin. You could use them. Va'kohanim bechala. And the Kohanim are allowed to use chala or truma. It's the same thing. Chala is just a derivative form of truma. It's a type of truma. So they can use this truma or chala because they're able to eat it. They're able to utilize it. Aval, what you cannot use. Lo betevel, something that does not have trumot masrot taken off of it. Again, the Gemara will say that's obvious. If it doesn't have trumot masrot taken off of it, why can you use it? Velo b'maser rishon shelo nitla trumato. Maaser rishon that didn't have trumat maser removed from it. Again, that is something that is simple or obvious, that if you haven't taken off trumat maser, you're not allowed to eat it. If you don't have trumat maser taken off of it, there's a chiyuv mita b'dei shamayim to eat it. So of course you can't use it. Velo b'maser sheni v'ekdesh lo nivdu. Maaser sheni and ekdesh that were not redeemed, they are kodesh. You can't utilize them for your personal benefit, so obviously you can't use them. So again, this list is a similar list to what we've seen before in the Mishnayot. The Gemara will go through each one of these items and explain to us why there's a chiddush in what's mentioned in the Mishnah with this subpar performance. Demai, ha lo chazile. Demai, he can't eat. So why can he use it as an eruv? Migo di bay mafkilu nechsei baviani v'chazule. It's not a problem because he has the option of disowning all of his property, all of his possessions, becoming a poor person, and the Chachamim gave a dispensation for poor people to eat demai. So there are two dispensations. We saw this before. It's Machloka Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel as to what you're allowed to do with demai. Here we are talking about one of those options, which is if a person is an ani, they may use or utilize that demai. Hashanami Chazileis over here too. It's okay for him to utilize it, even though in his current state he can't access it. But since he has the ability to make himself into an ani and use it, therefore, it's considered okay or chazilei. Titzran, we have a Mishnah. Machilim et aniim demai. One can feed the aniim demai. Ve'et hachsanya demai. Or the troops, you can give them demai. So in this case, it's machlok beit hillel and beit shammai, which we'll see in a second. But here, you're allowed to use demai for these two options. The chachamim, who were the ones who imposed the problem in the first place. Technically, the produce of the amaretz, rov amaretz, are masrinei. Chachamim said, don't rely on that. And Smachloka is why we don't rely on that. But the fact is that midrabanan, we don't rely on that rov. And we ask you to take it off again. Chachamim say, in certain circumstances, that we're not going to burden you with taking off the trumot masrot again. Because, for instance, when you're giving to the aniim, why should we burden you again to take off trumot masrot when you're already giving to the aniim? Why diminish the amount that the Ne'im will receive if in truth we really think that there were Trumot and Masrot probably taken off of this item? Troops, where there's an imposition on the town to take care of the troops. Rashi over here says these are Chayalot, Malchei Yisrael, Jewish troops that are housed in the city. Tosafot in other places brings the option that these might have been non-Jewish troops that are stationed in the city. And when the troops are stationed in the city, it's the obligation of the city to feed the troops while they are there. So again, this is something that's an imposition on the people where they have to give up of their own food, their own items, to take care of them. We're not going to impose on top of that an additional burden while they're doing something that is, in the case of aniim, good or tzedakah, or in the case of the troops, it's a quasi tzedakah, but they're paying for something that's an imposition on the town. Oh, why would, because you're not allowed to get benefit from tevel. If it's really tevel, you can't get hanah from tevel, you're not allowed to pay off your debts with tevel. If it's non-Jewish troops, right, you could feed them tevel in one sense, but your problem is that you are discharging a obligation through using tevel, and that might be the problem in that case. So, Amar Ravuna, Tana Beit Shammai Omim, Ein Machlim et Aniim Demai, Beit Hillel Omim, Machlim et Aniim Demai. So here we saw that it's Machloket Beit Hillel Beit Shammai, but discusses the Gemara Shabbat. Why do they even bring that fact that Beit Shammai disagrees over here? It's not really relevant. We answered there that to tell you that anytime you find somebody who has the opinion that Demai may not be used for Aniim or Achsanya, we know they'd assign that to Beit Shammai and not worry about that. That it's not an opinion that we have to worry about halachically. So over here, because you have the ability to be mafkir your possessions and become an ani and have access to the demai, that's why it works. The other possibility, there was another answer the Gemara could have given, but the Gemara does this, I guess, the kuli alma, is to say, like we have in our Mishnah, you're allowed to, a nazir is allowed to make an eruv with yayin. Why? Because someone else can eat it. So to over here, demai, if you put out your eruv's demai, you may not be able to eat it, but an ani could eat it. And that should make the eruv good enough, even without you becoming an ani. So the Tosva says, maybe because we want to be the kuli alma. Even according to those that think that it has to be chazilei, nevertheless, we can still create a position where it is chazilei, and that is that the person themselves can be mafkir nechseihem and make themselves into an ani. But you do have that alternative answer, or the Gemara in other places, this alternative answer wouldn't have worked, because here, by eruv, it matters that it's chazilei. In other places, that someone else eats it isn't good enough. And so since I told you this is a shas sugya, the Gemara gives an answer that'll work in all the different places. Right now, Maisa Rishon, Shinit La Chumato. Gemara says, Pshita, if you take out Chumat Maser from Maisa Rishon is Chulin. Why can't you use it? So Gemara says, Lo, Tzricha Shidimo Vishibalim. He went and took it while it was in, still in the stalks. V'nat Namimenu Chumat Maser. V'nat Namimenu Chumat Gidola. He took off of it Chumat Maser and not Chumat Gidola. In terms of the order of separation for Tevel, the first thing you must remove from the Tevel, technically, is Bikurim. That's the very first thing. The second thing that you take off is Chuma Gidola. After you take off Chuma Gidola, you remove Maiser Rishon. And after that, either Maiser Ani or Maiser Sheni. That's the order of removal or gifting of the items that are removed from the Tevel. It makes a difference, the order, because it depends what you're taking 10% of. If you take 10% up front, that would be 10% of 100. If you take off 10% after you've moved the Chuma Gidola, which is 2%, then you'd be left with 98%, and it's 10% of 98%, you only get 9.8% for the Maaser Rishon. So the order does matter because the removal of each item reduces what the subsequent gift is going to get or be given. So over here, the Levi says, listen, if I wait for the Kohen to take off the Chuma Gedola, I'm only going to end up with 9.8% of Maaser Rishon. So you know what I'll do is I'll go in early, and I'll get my Maaser Rishon before the Kohen gets his Chuma Gedola. And that way I'll end up with 10% of the produce rather than 9.8% of the produce. Now, there is some recollection, recapture of that through Chumat Maser, because that is 10% of 10%. Meaning that when the Levi takes off his 10%, he has to give 10% of that to the Kohen. The larger the portion of the Levi, the larger the Chumat Maser he'll have to give, but the recapture is not complete, because he's only giving back 10% of what he took. In the other half, the 90% of the 2%, he is still left behind. So in that case, if he takes off up front, he takes off 10%. The Kohen loses his 2% from the Chuma Gedola. He regains a little bit of it because he gives him 10% of that percent, which is 1%. He regains 0.02% of it through the Chuma Maser, but he still has lost 0.18% of what he would have gotten had he gotten his Chuma Gedola up front. On the other way, the Levi, had he waited, he would have gotten 9.8%. The Kohen would have gotten his 2% up front. The Levi now gets 9.8%. He has to give 0.98 of that to the Kohen. And again, the difference being that he gains the differential of the 10% of the 2% minus 0.02%. And because of that, he wants to go in early and take it, even though that's not proper. So now, he did that. So does that work? Uki Rabbi Bawamar Reish Lakish, Tamar Rabbi Bawamar Reish Lakish, Maaser Rishon, Shikdimo B'Shtibalim. Person who goes and takes off Maaser Rishon while it's still in the stalks, Patur Mi'Chuma Gedola. He does not have to separate out Chuma Gedola. Why? Shenemar, V'Romotem Mimenu Chumat Hashem Maaser Mina Maaser. You remove the Chumat Hashem from the Maaser, meaning the Maaser Rishon, Maaser Mina Maaser, Maaser Mina Maaser, Marti Lecha, V'Lo Chuma Gedola, U'Chumat Maaser Mina Maaser. If you remove from the Maaser Rishon, you're only obligated to remove the Chumat Maaser, the 10%. You're not obligated then to remove the Chumat Gedola, to take off an additional 2% of your 10% in order to get to the Chumat Gedola that you owe the Kohen. Now, the reason for that, we'll see in 1 second, because it's not completely true. And that is because, even if he took it after it was in the pile, much later on in the processing, what happens if the Levi shows up and says, you know what, I'm taking my Maaser Rishon before you give the Chuma Gedola to the Kohen. So over there, Nami, it should be fine, and he won't have to give Chuma Gedola. So Amalei, Abaye says back to Malecha Markra, to you the Pasuk says, it's a question about which Pasuk is quoted over here. We have the Pasuk of Mikom Asrutichem Terimu et Kol Shumat Hashem. Tosafot, you can see the Rashba brings an alternative Pasuk, because he thinks that this is the wrong Pasuk to quote, because this is talking about Shumat Maser, and you want a Pasuk that's talking about Shumat Gdola, which is Mikomat Nodechem Terimu Shumat Hashem. So that he quotes the alternative Pasuk as being the source for this. But either way, the Pasuk is saying Mikol. From everything, you must remove the Chumat Hashem. Meaning that even after you've taken Maaser Rishon, you're going to still have to pay the Chumat Gdola to the Kohen. He says, Umarait. How do you know when that cutoff is? How come in one case you tell me he doesn't have to pay Chumat Gdola? In the case, he does have to pay Chumat Gdola. The answer is, Hayidgan, Halo Yidgan. The difference is, when something becomes Chayav in Chumat Gdola. For Maaser, something to become Chayav in Maaser, the threshold is much earlier on. Many items, it's when it reaches a third of growth in the field. It could still be attached to the ground. Once it's reached a third of growth, if you take the item at that point, it's already Chayav in Maaser. Truma, you're not Chayav in until it reaches the end of the process. Until there is a, what we call Meruyach Hakri, until you have the pile of the grains after they've been processed to the point where you have the kernels that are there, and then you have a big pile of them, and then you smooth over the pile. That's the final stage of the processing. That's when you become chayav in Chumat Gdola. So because of that differential in the threshold, there's a period of time where someone is chayav in Maser, and not yet chayav in Chumat Gdola. And that's what the Gemara says is the difference. If the Levi jumps the gun and takes his Maaser Rishon before the produce becomes chayav in Chumat Gdola, then we say, okay, he has to take off Chumat Maser from his Maaser Rishon. He doesn't have to take off Chumat Gdola, because the item wasn't Chayav in Chumat Gdola when he took his Maaser Rishon. On the other hand, if he comes late in the process and jumps the gun and takes his Maaser Rishon, they're going to say you're going to have to take off both Chumat Maser and Chumat Gdola, because you took it after it was already Chayav in Chumat Gdola. That, of course, within the hands of the Levi, it will reach that threshold where it will become Chayav in Chumat Gdola, but that's not going to help at that point. At that point, already it's Maaser Rishon, and it doesn't have a din in Chumat Gdola. So that's, we have two psukim that are contradictory. One pasuk says, you only take off Chumat Maser. Another pasuk says, oh, you take off all Chumot, Chumat Maser and Chumat Gdola. How do we reconcile? We say, well, it depends when you took the item. If you took the item prior to being Chayav in Chumat Gdola, then the Levi only has to remove Chumat Maser. If you took it after it's Chayav in Chumat Gdola, then you'll have to remove Chumat Maser and Chumat Gdola. In both cases, he did the wrong thing. In both cases, he's supposed to wait. We have that in Vidui Maser that's mentioned in Parshat Ki Tavoh. There, we talk about the order in which something is supposed to be given. The Chumat Gdola is supposed to precede the Maaser Rishon. And that's even if we're talking about early on, Bishibalim. He's supposed to wait and then have the Chumat Gdola removed and then only then get his Maaser Rishon. So in both cases, he did something wrong. In one case, the solution is simply to take off Chumat Maser. In the other case, the solution is take off Chumat Maser and Chumat Gdola. So our Mishnah says, in a case where he jumped the gun early on in the process, and he gets his Maaser Rishon, over there he only has to remove Chumat Maser and he's okay. That's why you can use it for an Eruv. Because once you remove the Chumat Maser, then you are fine. You've removed the Chumat Maser, now this is good, even though you did something subpar. Again, it's a subpar performance, but the solution of taking off Chumat Maser gets to you where you need. And that's what the Gemara is saying here is the Chiddush in the Mishnah. Maaser Rishon, that had Chumat Maser removed from it, this is the type of Maaser Rishon we're talking about. One there where he jumped the gun and took it early. They were redeemed. If they're redeemed, then they're fully chulin. The kedusha moves on to the money, onto the other item, and the items left behind, that were a kodesh, or that were maaser sheni, are complete chulin. Why can't you use them? It says, pshita, lotzricha shenatana tekeren, v'onatana techomesh. When you redeem your maaser sheni or ekdesh, there's a demand that not only do you redeem it at the value, you must add on an additional chomesh, a fifth on top of it. It's a chomesh milabar, which means that you're really adding on 25% to the item. So you have to pay the 1.25 of the amount that you're redeeming. So what happens if he didn't redeem it with the chomesh? He simply paid the keren, principal amount, that is, the real value of the item, and didn't add on the additional 25% on top of it. So lo natan et chomesh, v'kamashalan, dein chomesh me'akev. Even though you're supposed to give it, if you don't give it, it's not me'akev. It doesn't stop the redemption from going through. Because, in essence, you have the full value on the money here. You just didn't add on that chomesh, which the Torah imposes on you. But the full value allows the kedusha to move. So because of that, you did a subpar performance of redemption, yet the redemption goes through because you left out the chomesh, but you didn't leave out the keren. You didn't do something that didn't allow it to remove the kedusha. So in our Mishnah, we're speaking about that case. He redeemed it at its full value, at its principal amount, but he didn't give the chomesh. So nevertheless, the items are now chulin. And since they're chulin, you can use them for your eruv. Aval lo betevel. Again, tevel, you're not allowed to get hanah from tevel. So why could a person use this? It's not chazile, it's not roi for him, it's not roi for anybody else. Why can you use tevel? When it says chita, you can't use it. So lo tzricha betevel tavul midrabanan. This is saying that's tevel midrabanan. Tevel is usually associated with the produce that mina Torah requires you to remove trumot and masrot. Mina Torah, according to most of the Rishonim, there are only a very few things that require that, and that's degancha, tiroshcha, v'yitzarecha. Degancha is your grains, your produce, which is the five grains. Tiroshcha is your wine or grapes, and yitzarecha is your olives or olive oil. Those three items are chayav and shmot masrot mina Torah. That's what's mentioned in the Torah. There's some Rishonim, there's an argument amongst the Rishonim whether peirot, fruit, or fruits on the trees also have a din d'oraita of shmot masrot or not. Vegetables, almost everybody, unanimously agrees that those are only d'rabanan. There's one or two places where some of the Rishonim strangely mention that they think that it might be d'oraita, but those are definitely d'rabanan. So over here, you have tevel. Tevel can be tevel because the Torah imposes shumot masrot on you. Then it can be tevel because the chachamim imposed tevel on you. Now, maybe we would think that when the chachamim imposed tevel on you, that's only a rabbinic imposition. And so is Eruv. Eruv is a rabbinic imposition. So let us say that possibly in that case, the chachamim waived their tevel and said, okay, you're right, you need to take off shumot masrot, but it's only an obligation mi derabanan, mi doraita, you could have eaten it. And since midoraita it's chazile, maybe it should be okay for an eruv. The answer is no. That it's tevel midorabanan, the rabbanan upheld their position in tevel, and you cannot use it for an eruv. And what is that case of tevel midorabanan? That's a case where kagon jazaroba atzit she'enu nakuv. He grew it in a pot that doesn't have a hole in it. The only way that you're chayav, it's a mitzvah tuya ba'aretz. Mitzvah tuya ba'aretz means it has to grow on the ground in Eretz Yisrael. If it's not growing on the ground, you're not chayav in shumot ma'asrot. So if you put it in a pot, and you grow it in your house in a pot, you're not chayav in shmot and masrot. Well, that's not totally true. Depends on the pot. The pot has a hole in it, where it has access to the air or to the ground space below it, then they believe that it is chayav mi deoraita in shmot and masrot because it gets sustenance. It draws sustenance from the ground because of the open nature of the pot having a hole in it, so it draws sustenance from the ground. But here we're having a case where the pot is completely closed on the bottom, and since it's completely closed, it's clear it's not drawing any of its sustenance from the ground. And if that's the case, you would not be chayav in trumot masrot min haTorah. But the Chachamim said in atzit she'enu nakuv, a pot that doesn't have a hole in it, midrabanan, you are chayav in trumot and masrot. Same problem arises with regards to shvi'it, when the shvi'it year comes around, about the same issue, about when you have a pot that doesn't have any holes in it, does that subject to the din of shvi'it or not subject to the din of shvi'it? Same thing, maybe midoraita it's not, but midrabanan, we impose it. So that's by tevel. Now, Gemara moves on to the next thing in the Mishnah. V'lo b'maaser rishon shelo nitla trumato. And not a maaser rishon that doesn't have trumat maser removed from it. Wait a minute, pshita, if you don't take off trumat maser, there's a chiyum mita b'dei shamayim, nobody's gonna eat, not even a kohen can eat it. So of course you can't use that for an eruv. Lo tzricha shikdimo b'kiri, that he took it, here's again, the Levi came and jumped the gun, and took it out after it became chayav in Trumat Gedolah. But not only menu Trumat Maser, he did remove the Trumat Maser from it, but, v'lo not only menu Trumat Gedolah, he didn't remove the Trumat Gedolah from it. Maudutema, I would have thought, because I'm really Rapapa Abaye. The way we just saw before, the Rapapa challenged Abaye and says, okay, so no matter when he takes it off, he shouldn't have to give Trumat Gedolah. The answer is, Kamashalan, Kedushanile. The way that Abaye answered him, no, that if it's after the Chiyuv Trumat, Gedolah, then you have to take off, not only have to take off Trumat Maser, you have to take off Trumat Gedolah. And the problem here is he did. He took off his Trumat Maser from his Maaser Rishon. But that's not enough in this case. In this case, you would have to take off also Trumat Gedolah. And when he doesn't take off Trumat Gedolah, it's not good. It's still a problem of a Chiyuv Mita Bidei Shamayim, and you can't utilize that for your Eruv. So here again, now we're having a list of items, we have subpar performance, and the subpar performance causes the problem, and doesn't allow you to use it. Before we had subpar performance, you took off Trumat Maser from the Maaser Rishon, and you're allowed to use it because you don't have to take off Trumat Gedolah. You took it early enough in the process where you didn't have to take off Trumat Gedolah, and that's why you're allowed to utilize it. Here, he took the Maaser Rishon early, took off the Trumat Maser, but it fails because he didn't take off the Trumat Gedolah because he took it so late in the process before the Kohen took his Tumah Gdolah. In both cases, he shouldn't have done it. In that case, we have a subpar performance which results in an item that you cannot utilize. Where in the first case, the subpar performance results in an item that you can utilize. Of course, if you don't redeem it, they're still Kodesh. So why would you be able to use them? So Gemara says, Lo tzricha shebadan, he redeemed them, lo badan gilchatam. He didn't redeem them properly. Maser, what does it not to mean not to redeem maser properly? Is shibdo agav asimon. He used an asimon, not the asimon that we know from the years ago in Israel, but an asimon, according to Rashi, an asimon is a coin without a imprint in it, without an image on it, a slug. And that is because there is a requirement in the Torah of tzarta akesef. Tzarta akesef biyadecha literally means that you bundle the money and you carry it up to Yerushalayim. The reason that you're redeeming it out of the money is because the produce is too much to take up to Yerushalayim. So you redeem it on the money. Vitzarta, I guess, if you wrap up the money and you take it up to Yerushalayim. The Gemara plays on the word vitzarta from the word tziyur, kesef yesh lav tzura, to have an image on it. And from that they learn that the kesef has to have a tziyur, has to have an image on it, has to be minted. It has to be a minted coin, not simply a blank coin that you're using to redeem it. So over here, he used a blank coin. Tosafot discusses over here in other places as well whether that definition of asimon is really correct. Rashi says ma'ab lo tzura. Tosafot wants to suggest that an asimon is anything that's not finished, that it hasn't reached the finished state, because the Gemara uses the term asimon in other places where it doesn't exactly fit this definition. So he says something that hasn't reached its finished state. So that's what he calls an asimon. But either way, if you use that to redeem the maser sheni, it does not work. It doesn't work. It's a subpar performance, but so subpar that it doesn't work at all. You're not redeeming it. The Torah says that that doesn't work, even though you have something that's of value here. You have silver, you have copper. It's just not minted into a coin where it has an image on it, so it doesn't work. Even though from a value standpoint, the redemption should have worked. It doesn't work because you have a technical problem that the Torah says it has to be a certain type of coin in order to redeem it. You would have thought that since you used the value, okay, you didn't do it perfectly, but you did it, that it should work. Here it tells you it's ma'akev, and it doesn't work at all. Hekdesh, shechilo agav karka. Hekdesh, that he redeemed it using land as the mechanism for redemption. Rachman amar, v'nata, I guess if it kamlo, this doesn't really exist, the pasuk, but it's a piece together, assuming that you have to pay with money, because it has to be kamlo. You have to be able to move it. It has to be something that changes hands. So since it's something that changes hands, the only thing they can use to redeem the kekdesh is something that is not real property. Something that is movable or metaltalin. Alright, so that's a good question. The Gemara, he learns this from a klal prat uklal, and a shtar is also precluded from being used as a mechanism for redemption. The Gemara eliminates a number of items that you can't use. And even though, as Tosafot points out, in general, throughout the Torah, we say sheva kesef kekesef. If you're obligated to pay money, we say in other places that you can give money, or you can give in-kind payment. If you give something in-kind that's worth the same amount of money, then we consider that to be kesef. Could it be a liquid value that's equivalent to the kesef they have to give? So why don't we just say that the land is shavah kesef over here? So the answer is that we have a mute. We have an exclusion here that says that karka doesn't work. Even though it might reach the value that you're trying to redeem, it still doesn't work because, again, there's a technical problem. The Torah says you can't use karka, not a value problem over here. It's not a value issue. It's simply a technical problem. So again, you would have thought it should work, even though you're doing it in the wrong way. The answer is that it's ma'akev. Karka doesn't work. It doesn't work to the point where you haven't redeemed the hekdesh, and that's why you can't use it for your eruv. All right, next Mishnah. Hashaleach eruvo biyad cheresh shote v'katan. A person who sends his eruv to be placed down with people who are not reliable. Cheresh shote and katan, we see them again. This is a combination that's mentioned throughout Shas, sometime about Mishnayot, which is a cheresh is someone who is both unable to speak, unable to hear. Again, we've mentioned many times that this is in their time where that person was clearly uneducated and considered to be someone who was not of full capacities. Shote, someone who has lost their mind for whatever reason or cause. And a katan, a minor. All these people, because of their state, are unable to be relied upon. Obiyad mishenu mode beiruv. Or you send it with someone who doesn't subscribe to a roof. Enu a roof. If you send it with them, it doesn't work. Ve'im amar lacher, the kablo. If on the other end you have a recipient who is going to receive it from them, the kabelo menu or a roof, it works. So if you have a reliable party on the other end who's meeting them in order to ensure that the eruv got there, then you can rely on that. That works. Now the Gemara says, V'katan lo, a katan cannot place down a eruv, Amar Rav Huna, katan govet a eruv. The katan is allowed to be the one who goes around in the eruvei chatzerot and collects the money or the food from each family, put together the eruv, and we rely on the katan to do that. So it says, lo kasha, kan beruvei tchumin, kan beruvei chatzerot. Your question is the answer of the Gemara. Wait, you're trying to extrapolate a din by eruv chatzerot to eruv tchumin, and they're two different dinim. By eruv chatzerot, we can rely on a minor. By eruv tchumin, we cannot rely on a minor. Rashi says the reason is because by eruv chatzerot, it's just a symbolic idea. Truthfully, min haTorah, it's a reshut yachid. The Chachamim said, well, because you're multiple owners, we want you to make it look like you're one owner. How do we make it look like you're one owner? You put all your food together and it makes as if you are a single entity now. So that is an imposition, again, midrabanan, that doesn't involve what we call a real kinyan. But eruv tchumin, on the other hand, you need to make a real kinyan. You need to place your location or make your locus somewhere else. And because of that, you need a real kinyan to have the item placed down in that area. That's the way Rashi describes the difference between eruv chatzerot and eruv chumin. And a katan, while he can collect the food for the eruv chatzerot, cannot make a kinyan for an eruv chumin. That's what Rashi says. Tosafot disagrees and says, I don't understand, because we have later on, we'll see in the Gemara a second, that you can use a peel, a kof, you can use an elephant, a monkey, to take the eruv, to transport the eruv for you. So over here, where we're saying, oh, the katan can't transport it because he has to make a real kinyan, the Gemara is about to say that you can use animals to transport it. So if the whole idea is kinyan over here, then what's the issue? That it can't be the real issue. So Tosfot says the difference is, one of them has a mekor in the Torah, one does not have a mekor in the Torah. Eruv chatzerot is a complete, we'll call it, invention of the Chachamim. I mean, it's done to prevent people from carrying from Reshut HaYechid to Reshut HaRabim. It's a preventative measure. But there's no source in the Torah, nothing that even resembles it in the Torah. As opposed to Erev Tchumin, which might have a source in the Torah, which is Al Yitzei Ish Mim Kamo B'Yom HaShabbat, that there is a specific area which you have designated for Shabbat. And many of the Rishonim believe that Erev Tchumim, after a certain distance, might be, right, 12 mil, or others have different measurements of how big it might be that there's actually tchumim midoraita after a very, very large amount. So the eruv derabanan is either there's a larger area that's doraita and they've just shrunk the area down to 2,000 amot, or you could just say that there's an asmachta. There's at least a mention of it in the pasuk in a hinted manner, so therefore it has a source in the Torah. And because of that, we have a higher standard by eruv tchumim than we have by eruv chatzerot, and that's the way Tosfot differentiates between eruv chatzerot and eruv tchumim. You can't send it with someone who does not believe in Eruv. Man, who's someone who doesn't believe in an Eruv? I'm Rav Chista, Kutai, the Kutim who only subscribe to Torah Shebichtav, not to Torah Shebopeh, and do not believe in anything the Chachamim say. Since Eruv is an imposition of the Chachamim, obviously they don't agree with Eruv. So you can't send it with them because they don't really care if the Eruv gets there. They're not reliable in terms of Eruv because they don't think that they're doing anything wrong if they toss it out. If you have someone on the other end who is receiving it, then it works. All right, that's great. You send it, you're a bardat. The recipient is a bardat. How do you know, this is before the age of phones, how do you know that the recipient on the other end actually got it? How do you know that the mission was carried out? You sent the mission, you sent the message with people that are unreliable. So how can you rely on those individuals to get it to the other party so you know the eruv's there? It's a case where you're standing and watching. Hachanami, also in our case, is Bomeid Roreu. You stand up from a place up high, and you watch that it gets to the person that you thought. Why don't we suspect the fact that the recipient doesn't take it from them? Why don't we worry about the recipient, even though they're reliable, who says they're going to carry out the mission that you assigned to them? We have a chazaka that when you ask someone to do something for you, they're going to carry it out. They're going to do it. If you ask someone to do something, the assumption is, unless they're your children, you assume that whatever you ask them will be done. Hachanami. So over here, so where are the statement of Rav Chisra and Rav Chiel said? We say, just like they said over there, they say over here. Where's the original statement that they make? Aha, Itzmar, we said on this, the Tanya, whoever brighta. Nitano the peel, toliko. Put it on an elephant, and the elephant took it, or he gave it to the elephant, put it in its trunk, and walked off with it. Or he gave it to a kof, v'olicho. He gave it to a monkey, and the monkey took it for him. Ein ze eruv. It doesn't work. V'im amar l'acher l'gablo emenu. If he has someone else receiving it from the elephant or the monkey on the other end, ha'ze eruv. Where it says, "V'dilma lo mematile." How do you know the monkey or the elephant got to the other party? So Amar Chista b'meid v'ro'eyu. It's a case where you can see that the elephant and the monkey carried out the mission. V'dilma lo mekabo mile. Who says that the recipient on the other end is going to carry out the mission? Amar Chiyach, chazaka shliach oseh shlichato. Amar Chazaka, that a messenger or an agent will carry out their agency. So now we have a two statement to discuss. Amar Nachman, v'shel Torah, ein chazaka shliach oseh shlichato. On a Doraita level, this chazaka does not apply. We do not assume that agency is carried out when we're talking about Torah level issues. Bishel Sufrim, Midrabanan, Chazaka Shliach Oseh Shlichuto. That's why it works over here, because we're dealing with the Din Derabanan, and that's why it works in this instance. Rav Sheshet Amar, Echadzeh, Vechadzeh, Chazaka Shliach Oseh Shlichuto. It doesn't matter whether it's a Din Doraita or a Din Derabanan, you can have this principle apply, which is agency is always carried out. Now, who's the halacha like? Is it like Rav Sheshet Rav Nachman? Tomorrow we'll come back and discuss their positions. Right, so, usually, the din is like Rav Nachman b'dine. He was a dayan, so when it comes to dinim, the halacha is like Rav Nachman. But b'isurei, the halacha is like Rav Sheshet. And therefore, Rabbeinu Shimshon, Meparlira, and the Bahag wanted to be posed like Rav Sheshet. But the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees and says that the halacha is like Rav Nachman over here. And he brings proofs to his position. And the Ri later on rejects the proofs of the Rabbeinu Tam. And he says you don't have to necessarily agree that a shliach oseh shlichato does not apply to a doraita, but he does give a nuance to it, which is important. And the Ri says, "Tamikozeh ein raya, Rav Sheshet nami leitli chazaka shliach oseh shlichato, ela b'makom, shim lo yaseh shlichato, yavo hamishaleach lidei aveira im yismoch." That we only apply the chazaka when there's a detrimental outcome to the sender of, or the appointer of the agent. If the agent doesn't do what they're supposed to do, the executor of the agency will lose out and then be faced with an aveira. In that case, we say that chazaka shliach oseh shlichato. But in a case where, if he doesn't do it, all right, so maybe he'll lose some money, maybe it won't work out, it'll be an annoyance or a problem for him, there we do not apply shliach oseh shlichato. So that's how the Ri explains the difference in other cases in Shas, where it seems to be that they're saying ein shliach oseh shlichato. That's only because in those cases there's no resultant aveira from the agency and the agent not carrying out his agency. All right, so stop here.